KALW.
The goal is not to sound like me. It's not to sound like your favorite poet or writer or musician. It's to sound like you.
Can you use poetry to shift perspectives around environmental justice?
As poets, it's important that we think about how do we facilitate conversations that can help counter that culture.
A conversation with the Berklee Ecology Center's first poet in residence. Then, a disability activist uses their performances to encourage others with disabilities.
There's kind of a literal nature to the metaphor of like, I'm like rising above my problems, or I'm like feeling weightless.
And we hear about a band that's always switching things up.
I named the band the Secret Empty Society because it is a secret frequently who will be in the band.
The Art of Activism. I'm Suni Khalid in for Hannah Baba, and this is Cross Currents. This is from our Culture Keeper series, profiles of people from around the Bay Area.
I was very much fascinated by bells and lights and whistles.
It's my role to learn it well and protect it and keep it.
Alors, je vais faire l'explication en anglais. Soyez tolérants.
Just the energy and the drive that they have, like the future is looking fucking golden.
For generations, artists have used their craft to create shifts in culture. The first poet in residence at Berklee's Ecology Center has been trying to do just that by shifting the culture around environmental justice in downtown Berklee. In this installment of Culture Keepers, reporter Anna Marie Yanni joins a class of freshmen at Berklee High School to hear from the poet himself.
It's early in the school day. Freshmen shuffle into their second period ethnic studies class.
So we have a special day. Yay!
They have a guest speaker today. Gabriel Cortez is a longtime East Bay resident, poet, and educator.
What's up, everybody? Good morning. My name is Gabriel Cortez. Pronouns he, him, and his.
Gabriel starts his poetry workshop by talking about food.
So these are the two big concepts we're looking at today. Extractive food systems and this idea of food sovereignty.
He's talking about the ways that food production can be both harmful and helpful to local communities and the environment. At first, the kids are a tough crowd. They're obedient, but not exactly enthused.
So if everyone could repeat after me, say extractive.
Extractive.
Nice. And repeat after me, say sovereignty.
Sovereignty.
Awesome.
But it's clear Gabriel has done this before. He has students do more call and responses and snap their fingers when they hear something they like. All things you might hear at a poetry open mic. Soon, they are loud. They're talking about examples of sustainable and locally owned food programs, like community gardens and farmers markets.
School lunch. You know, that's a deep Bay Area history, actually. Y'all know who invented the free breakfast program, right? The Black Panthers. Y'all didn't know that?
Gabriel says today's goal is to get the students reflecting on their experiences with food and how food production, with its carbon emissions, relates to climate change. Later, he has them write about it.
The task is just to tell your story and see where those words kind of fit in between, yeah? But the goal is not to sound like me. It's not to sound like your favorite poet or writer or musician. It's to sound like you.
It's quiet, this time because the students are focused inwards. Pencils move quickly. Gabriel is here today because he's the Ecology Center's first poet in residence. The environmental nonprofit runs farmers markets, waste collection, and education programs. Gabriel's residency with them started back in 2023. He sees the role of the poet as questioning parts of dominant culture that are harmful, like racism and sexism.
And as poets, it's important that we think about how do we facilitate conversations that can help counter that culture.
Gabriel's work with the Ecology Center is about shifting the culture around how we think about the environment. He first learned about the center as a Berklee resident.
Compost in Berklee. I always love when family members, you know, kind of come around like, what is that? And it's just like, well, let me show you. And yeah, Ecology Center was probably the first to show me how to do that.
About a decade ago, Gabriel was performing at poetry slams around the Bay when he went to a poetry and activism workshop sponsored by the Ecology Center. Gabriel is Black and biracial, and he performed a poem about the disproportionate impact of type 2 diabetes on people of color.
And this was one of the first times where I was being invited to write about a particular topic and think about how does this relate to my experiences, my community, my family.
After the workshop, he helped the Ecology Center campaign for the first citywide soda tax, which helps fund food and gardening programs in Berkeley schools. Now, Gabriel is once again using poetry for social change. In summer 2023, he asked the Ecology Center if he could be their poet in residence and help further their environmental justice goals with the help of a state-funded grant. He remembers the day he got it.
It was just such an incredible, exciting. I was fist pumping in the car. For me, this is the first time that I've been able to be a full-time artist.
And he gets to do what he loves, use poetry to change culture, specifically in downtown Berkeley, a region he admires for its history of resistance. With the grant, Gabriel hosts workshops for local poets with the Ecology Center. He coordinates poetry performances at local events, farmers markets, and Berkeley High. The goal is to share stories that the community needs to hear.
The conversation of our times is environmental justice, is climate change. We know that we need pieces, poems, artists, just like we need teachers, students. We need politicians, activists that are oriented towards what are other ways of being besides the one that got us here.
And he brings his workshops to students, workshops like the one I'm attending today. He says listening to students read what they wrote is one of the best parts.
And that's, you know, really kind of like the heart of the work when we're talking about like culture shift. It takes, you know, I think a brave poet to say, what else? You know, what if we do this? And within the space of the classroom where silence is the norm, where the teacher is at the front and they're the only speaker, for a poet to raise their hand and in that moment become the teacher. That's a really, really exciting moment to get to witness.
You are very invited. Is that a hand over there? Yeah, snap it up for the poet right over here, y'all.
I find food on my table. I am lucky. Steaming pots and full bubbling pans set on cork trivets.
Whenever we're bringing our poems to community, we know that we're planting seeds that are probably going to bloom out of sight.
So that you can pass that food, that care, that heart and soul right back down the line to those who deserve it. Find your food where it comes from.
Let's go, poets! Snap it up!
I certainly notice how much louder the kids are when he leaves. In Berkeley, I'm Anna Marie Yanni for Cross Currents.
Thank you, Anna. You can listen to the rest of our Culture Keeper stories at kalw.org/culturekeepers. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Sunil Khalid in for Hana Baba. Queer, Black, biracial, disabled, and glamorous. Those are just a few of the words to describe Bay Area activist and artist Alex Locust. In 2023, Alex, also known as Glamp UT, was crowned Butch Queen in the annual drag pageant at the Castro Theater. He says he hopes his work is a model to other disabled people who want to shape culture and share their shine. Just in time for this week's Pride Week, KALW's Janae Darden spoke with Alex about their passion for disability justices and the sparkle they bring to their performances.
Alex, welcome.
Thank you, Janae.
I'm so excited to talk to you because you do so many things and just have so much going on. I know you've been asked this question a million times, but you are known as Glamp UT. That's your stage name, yes. I love how you framed your face with your hands when I asked you about your stage name. I love the name. I'm just the combination of words mm-hmm. I'm hearing in that name. Tell us where the name came from. Who is Glamputee?
Yeah, who is Glamputee? That's the question of the hour of the day. It started off just as an Instagram handle because I was getting more into like my fashion and adornment and just like enjoying being publicly more exuberantly queer and also owning and celebrating my identity as a disabled person. And then it just works so well for a performer moniker because whether it's me performing through public speaking, workshop facilitation, or drag or dance, you know, it's not Drabutee, you know, like it's like Glamputee. It's kind of, for me, it's like a call to action. It's almost like my own accountability. I can't come in and phone it in. I can't show up like three quarters of the way there. Like for me, my name is telling you what you're going to get. And so I have to show up and deliver. And I think that's been like a fun game in how I pursue my art and creativity to like live up to that name, right?
I read you were born with your disability. Mm-hmm. That's what I read. You could define, I was going to say, you are glamorous with one leg.
Yes.
And I'm thinking about you being biracial, Black, queer, disabled. Mm-hmm. And we put so many labels and just have so many expectations or assumptions with all of those labels, we as a society. Yeah. You carrying all that in your body. Did you ever have issues with how you saw your body? Or just embracing your body, carrying all those labels?
You're getting at what a lot of my work is trying to do, which is turn the mirror back onto society, right? And interrogate what we hang on those labels. And for me, it's been, I mean, it's a continuing journey. It's, you've kind of named the three identities that I grapple with the most, and each chapter of my life, I feel like a different one is kind of in the foreground and the other two are informing how I'm, you know, processing my queerness or like trying to identify a authentic relationship to being Black, white, biracial. And that all plays out in my body. That all plays out in like how I have a sense of self-image. And, you know, it's been, to say difficult is putting it lightly. You know, I think about, you know, I was born where my left leg just never developed. You know, I had a residual limb. Most doctors, when children are born like that, encourage parents to amputate at birth. And so that's something that that child can't consent to. And I'm very grateful that my mom and dad denied them the opportunity to do that. They wanted me to have agency. And then when I was growing up, trying prosthetics, doing all of that, you know, they weren't very comfortable. They weren't working well. Part of that is because, you know, I was born without a leg. So we're basically kind of like putting a limb on me when I never had one. So I think there was part of that. But also a lot of doctors aren't used to creating devices for people whose limbs are different because they tend to amputate at birth. So they're used to like a very similar presentation. So I say all that to say at 13, doctors invited me to reconsider amputation so that I could get better prosthetics, which we did. It was a deeply traumatic experience, as you can imagine. And just looking back, you know, it's really hard because prior to that, you know, my body was how it was, right? This is how I was born. You know, if what disability justice says, like, you know, we are all made whole, you know, there's not something that's missing. There's not a deficit. There's nothing that needs to be fixed. Like I was born how I was supposed to be born. And to have something removed told me that something was wrong with my body and that it needed to be fixed. And then the dissonance after that of feeling out of my body because of what we decided to do and feeling like I'm not in my body anymore because somebody took something away from me. It's hard to look back on and realize that, you know, pressures from the medical industrial complex, pressures from people who were intending to do well by me and trying to help me out. You know, I don't use a prosthetic as an adult. And so it's kind of like I went through all of that trauma for nothing. And I have to constantly grapple with being in the middle of all of those margins and also holding power around like the queer community's relationship to bodies and disability and like what it means to be in the middle of like processing like masculinity and strength and ability and like Black men's relationship to, you know, strength. And, you know, so like it really, any way you kind of approach it, my body can be a wrench in the system. And at the same time, like when I release the sense of like, that's not my fault, then I can kind of like find more joy or pleasure or embodiment through drag, through like being in community with people of all sorts of different body types where we're all like, I got you.
You express yourself again through different art forms, mm-hmm. Such as drag.
Yeah.
And you are the 2023 reigning Butch Queen. Hello.
Hey.
Okay. We got drag royalty yes. here. What does winning that title mean to you? And what are you doing with this platform as a 2023 to 2024 Butch Queen?
You know, it never gets old to hear, I have to say. That was a night of a lifetime, you know, to put myself out there, you know, in the context of everything that we've been sharing, right, and talking about, to be able to be on stage as a visibly disabled drag artist. And again, it's like what I want my work to be doing is be a sense of permission, right? Like disability justice also talks about collective liberation. Like it's not me being like, well, I want to be the only disabled drag artist. Like I want other disabled people to perform, be on stage, be a part of creative teams, be a part of creative work. I want everybody to be able to do it.
And now, Glamputee is flying in the air.
Yes.
You're doing silk performances.
Yes.
How has that been for you?
Man, what a joy. It is so fun to just be up there flying, you know? It's like, I go bouldering. That's like a big part of my wellness and my activity. And that feels like, I call it my superhero training, you know? It's just like, I feel so something else getting to like climb up the wall. And so similarly, just kind of getting to float, there's kind of a literal nature to the metaphor of like, I'm like rising above my problems, or I'm like feeling weightless, right? And there's still that like tension or power that's involved to hold myself, to be strong. And there's also grace and like fluidity and softness. And so just to like explore a new embodiment practice that is both feels really difficult and I'm finding to be pretty natural at it has been such a joy.
That was disability activist and artist Alex Locust, also known as Glamputee, speaking with KLW's Janae Darden. Follow Glamputee on Instagram for info on future performances. We'll have a link at kalw.org/crosscurrents. This interview was co-produced by Porfirio Rangel. This is Cross Currents. I'm Suni Khalid in for Hana Baba. Next, we continue our celebration of Pride Week with musician Cindy Emsch. She's the lead singer for the country band, The Secret Emschy Society. The band features queer themes infused with a twang of Southern country, with songs that talk about longing, heartbreak, passion, and joy. In this story from our series Bay Area Beats, recorded in 2020, Cindy talks about the band's history and its connection to the Bay Area.
Hi, this is Cindy Emsch, Oakland's First Lady of Queer Country and the lead singer of The Secret Emschy Society. I would describe my music style as outlaw Americana country because I feel like it really harkens back to the 50s, 60s, and 70s, but also has sort of political and leftiness to it. I
first started creating music technically with my mother when she would play her accordion when I was a small child, and I would sing along with these 1920s cabaret songs. But myself personally, I had a job working at a city boat launch back in Michigan and taught myself how to play guitar with a Leonard Cohen and a Tom Waits songbook. So that was when I first started really playing my own music. Queer woman performing country music has been surprisingly welcoming. I've had anxiety for sure about, you know, traveling into some smaller towns. I remember I was on tour in Omaha, we're unloading the car, and these people pull up to us in this minivan and they get out and they're like, huh, so you're blue, huh? Because I had, you know, Bernie stickers. And I was like, yeah, because I'm outspoken, like, I'm not gonna back down. Then they got all smiling, I'm like, great, we're with the other band. We want us to help you unload. And it was like so scary for a minute. They were like, yeah, don't worry about it. If anyone gives you any crap, just come get us. We protect the blue in our town. And I was just like, what? My last name is so hard to pronounce for a lot of people that just playing as my own name hasn't really worked. But back when I was doing a lot of poetry and spoken word, an MC one time added a Y to the end of my name to make it easier to pronounce. They said, well, now you're MC, like Kimchi. And I was like, okay, if that works. And it strangely really has. I've been performing with the Secret MC Society for approximately 6 years. I'd been in a number of bands previously that unfortunately had to break up because of geography. The Bay Area is so expensive, and I have lost 3 bands to people being not able to afford to stay here. I named the band the Secret MC Society because it is a secret frequently who will be in the band. It's always me, like I am the constant, but when I tour, I often have to tour by myself because I can't afford to take an entire band with me. And so I have musicians in other towns that can just hop on stage and play with me. Performing in the Bay Area has absolutely formed me as a musician and performer in every single kind of way. When I first moved here in the late 90s, all my friends were punk rockers. I formed an accordion junk band with my good friend John Flaw from San Francisco, and we were really informed by the steampunk and drag communities of San Francisco, and the country music was all inspired by my sort of East Bay roots. And so everything about the Bay Area, how diverse it is, the many different like styles and cultures that come together, that's absolutely what inspired all of the music I create and how I perform. Like a song.
And we dance like the world is ending.
There are a few things about performing in the Bay Area that are different. One thing is there will always be a much better bourbon selection, but one of the other things that is so different is that I feel like it's often a very open-hearted crowd. I have frequently had audience members come up to me, sometimes laughing, you know, maniacally, and sometimes with tears in their eyes, to tell me how a song like made their day or touched them, or they identified with some of the themes or experiences I was singing about. And in other places that definitely still happens, but the Bay Area really has a market on people feeling comfortable to come up and share their experience with your song with you. I think that if I had advice for any musicians that wanted to start performing out, definitely pay attention to who else in your community is making the kind of music you like. You know, whether it's local in the Bay Area, I mean, any genre you want to play, if you're in the Bay Area, someone's playing it and they're doing a great job. And they're probably really, really friendly about meeting other people who are doing it because we're a pretty nice bunch. I feel like it's a really welcoming community overall, and I'm just so incredibly appreciative.
That story was produced by KALW's Porfirio Rangel in 2020. You can catch Cindy performing tonight at KALW's live event space at 220 Montgomery in downtown San Francisco. They'll be part of an all-star lineup hosted by Janae Darden. It will be a night of music and comedy. Hope to see you there.
I carved my name on the ceiling.
Today's team includes Aru Nair, Zen Iqbal, Hussein Khan, James Rowlands, Ganeri Joe Johnson, Victor Tentz, Shireen Adel, Marissa Ortega Welch, Angela Johnston, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Suni Khalid.